Hello and welcome to the Gandhara, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Pakistan and Afghanistan. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Already difficult, the fragile security situation in Afghanistan got further deteriorated in recent days, and the attackers are particularly targeting Afghan security forces. In October alone, nearly 200 people, majority of the members of the Afghan security forces, lost their lives in several attacks occurred in West, East, and South, all claimed by the Taliban militants. Security already fragile, but how to understand the recent unprecedented hike in attacks? Why so many casualties of security personnel, and why so much a focus on security forces? This is what we plan to discuss in upcoming 30 minutes. To do so, I'm joined by Barmak Peshwak, senior Afghanistan analyst at the Washington-based U.S. Institute of Peace. Bilal Sarwari is joining us, who's the Kabul-based Afghan journalist. And Abu Bakr Siddiq, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website, is joining us from Prague today, which looks into Pakistan in Afghanistan. Welcome on board, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mohammed.
Thank you very much for joining us. So, Bilal, let's start with you by recalling some of the major attacks in October. I guess today or yesterday there was another attack with a number of casualties. So, details, please.
Yes, I think what you are looking at is the volatile security situation. The last few years, the Taliban were able to expand their area of recruitment. We've also seen groups like the Islamic State, ISKP, as it's known here. So, unfortunately for the Afghan government, for the people of Afghanistan, it's a fight on many fronts. And attacks in major cities, including Kabul, is just the latest worrying trend. But at the same time, we also see the American military, other Western forces, as well as the Afghan government, escalating this fight, whether it's more airstrikes, drone strikes targeting both Taliban as well as the Islamic State, or it's special forces operations. So, unfortunately, the situation remains very bleak. You also have to bear in mind that Afghanistan's own issue of not being able to deal with the issue of good governance, providing security, is one issue. The other issue that's also a source of tension between Washington and Islamabad, Kabul and Islamabad, is the issue of militant groups like the Haqqani Network. So, unfortunately, the way it looks, Afghanistan will continue to be bearing the brunt of this conflict, and there's no end in sight, at least from these bloody attacks that we have seen.
Abu Bakr, so what's your take? If this type of attack would happen, let's say, 2-3 months ago, we would attach that with the Taliban's annual spring offensive, but it's no more spring. So what is your take on real reason behind this surge in over the past, let's say, a month?
Well, I think as Bilal rightly pointed out, there are a number of reasons, but I think the most immediate reasons are a kind of military escalation on both sides. We know that since assuming office in January, President Trump has changed or relaxed a lot of rule of engagement for American forces in Afghanistan. And Afghan and American forces are killing a lot of insurgent, I mean, truly insurgent in great numbers. So that is provoking the insurgent to kind of engage in their own escalation. And that is very clear from their literature. If you read the Taliban statements, I mean, pro-Taliban media, stuff they don't say officially on their website, but they kind of get it out. And of course, to add to this mix is groups such as the Islamic State Khorasan Province, ISKP, and of course the continued failures of Kabul to implement meaningful reforms and for the Afghan elite to kind of unite. And Afghanistan also for decades has been suffering from external interferences, primarily most of the negative interferences are blamed on Pakistan, Iran, and now on Russia.
Okay, let's bring on Barmak, you here. You are sitting in Washington, and Abu Bakr is kind of hinting that this recent surge by the Taliban might have to do with the surge on Washington's behalf against the Taliban. So can any major international event, something in Washington, D.C., could explain these recent surge of attacks by the Taliban against the security forces in Afghanistan?
I think this kind of like tit for tat, basically a response, you know, a show of force by Taliban to the announcement of the new strategy for Afghanistan by President Trump late this summer. So that might be one of the reasons that, you know, before the winter, the Taliban probably are trying to show that they are still a fighting force. They are a fighting force that needs to be taken into account, and they are not going anywhere. And they have the capacity and capability to target anywhere in Afghanistan, any kind of military installation, as they have shown in the recent months. But also there might be, I don't have any clear evidence right now, but there might be also a struggle between the Taliban leaders, between the military commanders and those that are willing to start any kind of negotiation with the government in Kabul or the U.S. or others, that, you know, the needs and the wants of those military commanders that are actually leading the forces in the battlegrounds need to be taken into account if they are going to enter any kind of negotiation or talks with Kabul or Washington.
But I heard yesterday or previous day, Abdullah calling on UN to impose sanctions on Taliban. It appears that the peace talks are not anymore on the table.
We are getting really conflicting reports, and I think different stakeholders, they have different assessments of the need for peace talks. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, even if you look at the statements made by Secretary Tillerson, there are hopes that there will be a group of Taliban or a leadership group within the Taliban that will go for peace, full settlement of the issue in Afghanistan, and will enter negotiation to find a political settlement or at least kind of start negotiating over their terms and conditions about a peaceful future for Afghanistan. So I think there are different interpretations and different analysis of the current state of affairs in Afghanistan, and obviously the Afghan government, that for them that is the best thing to make life difficult for Taliban and their leadership by imposing more sanctions on them and also putting them under the blacklist by United Nations. But that is something that they want, but I don't know what are the position of other stakeholders.
Okay, Abu Bakr, the first major attack I think in October took place by the Taliban the day after a drone attack in Fatah, in which it was reported that a senior Taliban commander was killed. Any possible connection of the drone attack to the recent surge in attacks by the Taliban, in your point of view?
I think there's definitely a connection. Whenever there is escalation on one side, the other side responds, of course, with their own, in their own way of fighting. Of course, the Taliban do not have an air force, so their most potent weapon is these complex attacks, in which a group of attackers, mostly suicide bombers, attack a government facility and cause maximum damage. This is kind of the Taliban version of special forces before being killed or captured. And Haqqani network is famous for them. So in recent months, the Haqqani network, which is the main fighting arm of the Taliban, particularly the military wing of the Taliban that threatens capital Kabul and some of the key population centers near Kabul. So one of the major attacks, the first major attack, was in Gardez, which is the capital of southeastern Paktia province, the traditional stronghold of the Haqqani network. So in a way, the Taliban are now, I think, confused, particularly the Haqqanis, because as I reported last week, there are now increasing differences emerging between Pakistan and the Haqqani network. Previously, they were very close allies. Probably the closest ally of Pakistan within the broader Taliban movements are the Haqqani people, which is basically a large family or clan people loyal to this Afghan cleric who has been Pakistan's main ally, one of Pakistan's main allies in Afghanistan since 1970s, Jalaluddin Haqqani. So this is probably one of the indications that the things are, by escalating in Afghanistan, the U.S. might be forcing a lot of changes within the networks and the relationships that are perpetuating the Afghan war.
Bilal, earlier Barmak was saying that these surge in attacks by the Taliban might also has to do with divisions within the Taliban militants. That's first part of my question. The second is there any recent developments within Afghanistan which could explain these attacks?
Well, I think you have to look at the fact that the Americans as well as other international forces have really been upping the ante in terms of airstrikes targeting Taliban as well as the members of the Islamic State. Clearly, feeling the pressure, the Taliban and other groups are now shifting the focus to major cities, to bigger cities, where they feel that they can put pressure on the Afghan government. But it's also about a crisis of leadership. It's also about the issue of corruption. It's also about who you appoint at a provincial level in a major city like Kabul. That's one of the issues for the Afghan government to deal with it. But then I think the Taliban, as well as their backers in the region, I think come also into the equation because you really can't ignore that aspect of it. So perhaps there's that belief that we can fight the Americans and the international community out. As far as the Taliban leadership in Qatar goes or somewhere else outside of the country, I have always felt that there's this huge disconnect between foot-level Taliban soldier, a field commander, and someone who sits, let's say, in a place like Qatar. And we've heard that directly or indirectly from them, saying, well, it's us losing our family members. We're doing the fight, and they have a very comfortable life. So I think there's that issue. But from what I see, at least the last year or so, is a clear shift of focus in terms of targeting major cities. Every time those attacks have taken place, they have been deadly, they have been successful. And then when you find out a few weeks later on that those attacks were made possible because of incompetency, because of corruption, or because of politicization of the Afghan National Security Force.
Thank you very much, Bilal. Now, whatever the real reasons are, it tells us one thing, that the Taliban's latest attacks are mostly diverted to security forces. And Bilal also mentioned two major cities, and Afghan forces are taking huge hit. What does this explain? Are the Taliban's getting smarter, or there is something really seriously wrong with the Afghan security forces? We will continue the debate talking about this and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Gandhara podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Majlis podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Central Asia from local perspective, and the podcast is published every week, most probably Saturdays, on Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Gandhara Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's podcast on Pakistan and Afghanistan. We are discussing possible reasons behind the recent hike in Taliban attacks in Afghanistan. Joining me in the discussion are Barmak Pajwak, senior Afghanistan analyst at the Washington-based U.S. Institute of Peace. Bilal Serveri is joining us, who is Kabul-based Afghan journalist. Abu Bakr Siddiq, editor of Radio Free Europe. Radio Liberty's Gandhara website is with us from Prague, which looks into Pakistan in Afghanistan. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Gandhara here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen. To start with you, Bilal, actually to continue with you, as mentioned earlier, unfortunately, Afghanistan is not new to such attacks. The fact that the security forces are the target in recent wave of attacks, and they are taking major hits. Why is that?
Well, I think clearly the casualties, the fatalities, and attrition rate among the Afghan National Security Forces quite alarming. One reason for that is that President Barack Obama left an Afghan National Security Forces fending for itself. Remember, the Afghan Air Force is nowhere to be seen. Remember the announcement by President Barack Obama that the U.S. was leaving in 2010 and 2011. Obviously, that was because of internal U.S. political environment, but that really emboldened both the Taliban and their supporters. I think what is quite complicated right now is that the Afghan government and its international allies are fighting on many different fronts. You don't have the issue of Afghan soldiers not fighting. I think the problem is in Kabul. You've got acting Minister of Defense. You don't have a Minister of Interior who's also acting. You have this growing trend of politicization within the Afghan National Security Forces. And I think the dilemma for the U.S. is that it pays the bill. I mean, you're speaking about billions of dollars. So I don't understand what the solution is, because right now nothing seems to be working. Not only security, it's also the economy that's not in great shape.
Just to continue, Barmak, so what does the recent hike in casualties of Afghan security forces explain to you?
I think Afghan national security forces have done a great job in the last couple of years by holding their territory. But obviously, they have some serious problems in terms of their leadership, in terms of a clear strategy. There is a clear lack of an integrated fighting strategy within the Afghan National Security Forces, that is the police, the National Army, the intelligence services, and also they have suffered from intelligence gaps and coordination with between each other. They have serious logistical problems still. So these are the problems that they have. And unfortunately, they are in the front line of the fight with the Taliban. And as such, they are the primary target of the insurgent forces. I think with the new policy of the United States and the new attention given to Afghanistan, and I think there will be, at least in terms of logistics and in terms of providing additional resources to them, both in terms of technical assistance and training and advice, and also in terms of equipment that are more durable and more applicable to the fighting grounds of Afghanistan. I think those issues will be somehow dealt with in a positive way. But again, the issues of leadership and command and control structure are issues that the Afghan government needs to take them really seriously, and additional reforms and additional structural adjustment and institution building of Afghan national security forces are really needed.
Barmak, you mentioned the command and structure question. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think one thing that that's obviously, I think, you know, if you just listen to the news, for instance, yesterday, the soldiers on the front line in Kunduz, they were complaining that they are not receiving neither the required amount of ammunition to fight, or they have any, even the government is not able or to provide them food on time. So those are the issues that are really, you know, at the front line. If an army is not able to provide for soldiers at the front line for any reason, there is a problem with command and control.
At this moment, I think we lost Abu Bakr. I hope he will join back until he comes, Bilal. So what the Afghan officials in Kabul are talking about this in terms of these fault lines, in terms of huge casualties of Afghan security personnel?
I think there's a very big disconnect, because the sons and relatives of none of these generals and officials are serving in the Afghan National Security Forces. And for that reason, President Ashraf Ghani's son and daughter lives away, or you can say the same about many other Afghan ministers and officials. And I think this is a source of bitterness, this is a source of discontent. I mean, today I was listening to the spokesman for the Ministry of Defense, General Dawlat Waziri, saying that militants, the Taliban and other groups, have no control whatsoever over any percentage of that ground in Afghanistan. I think that's just a white lie, because if you look at the assessments by SIGAR, by many other respectable international organizations, you would know that that's not the situation. I mean, even the U.S. military acknowledges the situation is gravely becoming volatile, and you only have to look at the casualties and fatalities. So I think that dishonesty in terms of admitting and accepting that the situation on the ground is not bad, I think is bothering a lot of people. And one thing I must admit is that the number of coffins going back to small villages and districts will have a major impact on the recruitment of the Afghan National Security Forces. And even when the coffins of Taliban fighters go back, that will also have an impact on the society. So at the moment, unfortunately, that's the situation. But there's a lot of political bickering in Kabul as well, because the National Unity Government is finding itself in all sorts of troubles. There's a tense relationship with the parliament that's already stayed overstayed its term. The actual structure of the government is highly questionable if you look at the constitution. So I think there's a crisis of legitimacy on many, many different fronts. Mm. I mean, let's talk about parliamentary elections. You can't hold parliamentary elections for the last 2 years because of the insecurity that is spreading far and wide. So I don't know, but if you ask many people here in Kabul, they find the situation quite depressing. And I think Afghanistan continues to bleed on a daily basis. As you and I are speaking, a fuel tanker exploded in the city of Charikar after a sticky bomb was attached to it, and a passenger bus that was in that area was also caught in that attack. So we're just talking about the daily lives of Afghans that's just not secure, and Afghans are just dying in very big numbers.
Abu Bakr, welcome back. I know you lost in the middle. We were talking about very similar structural issues in terms of the administration in Kabul when a similar attack happened, I think, several months ago in Mazar-e-Sharif on a military garrison there. So why it became so huge issue to solve this crisis? Abu Bakr, are you with us?
Yes, I heard your question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was saying that what you have in Afghanistan is a state that is being rebuilt with foreign funding. And you have an elite that is jostling for power, privilege, financial gain from those investment or this international US-led exercise. So the problem in Afghanistan is that unless and until the Afghan elites find a way of kind of, in a way, peaceful coexistence and commit themselves to rebuilding their country, no amount of foreign funding can resolve these issues. And this is precisely the issue with the military. At the heart of it is that there were, I mean, a lot of the recruitment was not done on merit. I mean, the officer corps, the training issues. And of course, this is an army that is being trained and built in the middle of a war. They're constantly under attack. And on top of that, you have these larger issues, regional issues. For instance, the U.S. intervention or international intervention in Afghanistan never succeeded in preventing Pakistan or somehow persuading Pakistan to give up support to the Taliban. Yes, there are problems inside Afghanistan. There are all these management issues and lack of coordination. I was listening to a very long speech by the Afghan deputy defense minister, General Murad Ali Muradi. It was a huge, long litany of complaints of what is not going right. And these were mostly like people not listening to each other and not coordinating properly and dishonesty and corruption and lack of patriotism. But at the heart of it is that, like, if the Afghan political elites in particularly can unite behind a vision of what kind of country they want to live in, I think things will change.
We are kind of reaching towards end of our discussion, but last point, obviously there are many, many fault lines, there are many problems, there are many actors in the connection of those problems, sometime within Afghanistan and sometime it goes into regional countries and beyond the region, but still there is a sitting president in Afghanistan. If you were to be his advisor, Barmak, what would you advise him to do in this situation?
I believe President Ghani has too many advisors already, so that will help the bureaucracy in Afghanistan if he doesn't hire any new advisors. But anyways, I think President Ghani knows exactly what he's doing. I think he's doing a great job in Afghanistan. But as Abu Bakr just highlighted and said about the litany of the problems that Afghanistan faces, President Ghani has to build up a government from scratch. I don't think Afghanistan, prior to President Ghani and prior to the National Unity Government, managed to build the institutions of governance in the country. I think the current government is trying to do that, and this is a very, very difficult task. It needs both time, patience, and resources, and I think a clear vision. The National Unity Government leaders need to agree on a set of shared and common interests that are for Afghanistan and not for their political ends or political means, but for Afghanistan and the rest of the Afghan elite, they need to agree also on those issues and provide and protect for their people. I think that's what they need. As long as they can both provide for the Afghan people and protect them, then the Afghan people will trust him. Otherwise, it is the gap of trust between Afghan people and the government of Afghanistan has unfortunately increased to the degree that opens the opportunities for any kind of spoilers to come and spoil the situation. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, the same question to you, Abu Bakr, then Bilal.
Well, I would not like to be in that very difficult position of advising the Afghan leader, but to the extent I can advise him, I will suggest that there has to be a pan-Afghan effort. The Afghans have to ultimately find a peace among themselves and looking at various outside actors to deliver peace to them. This might mean very difficult compromises, such as the compromise that the National Unity Government reached with former warlord Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, the leader of Hizb-e-Islami this year. Maybe something similar has to be done with the Taliban. And I think fighting and more violence ultimately will not solve Afghanistan problem. It might give an upper hand or advantage to one side in the war temporarily, but it will not resolve Afghanistan problem. Mm-hmm. I think for now, President Ashraf Ghani, I think he made the right noises after Donald Trump's strategy was announced in August by emphasizing peace among Afghans and trying to reach out to the Taliban. I think the Taliban should also realize that ultimately their future is tied to Afghanistan, and their future generations can only claim to be Afghans if they live inside Afghanistan and if they are seen as supported by outsiders. I think they'll have very little support in the future.
Okay. Bilal, briefly, your point in that question. Bilal? I think we lost Bilal. Anyway, thank you. Thank you very much, Abu Bakr, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website, for your time in Tartus today. And also big thanks goes to Barmak Pajwak, senior Afghanistan analyst at the Washington-based U.S. Institute of Peace, and Bilal Serveri, Afghan journalist who was participating from Kabul today. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time and insights.
Thank you, Tahir.
Thank you very much. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Gandhara podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.